Hi, McCartney fans, and welcome to episode 120 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi. You may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. And as always, I'm joined by my partner, McCrime, my backwards traveler. He is Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on?
Still frozen.
Sorry to hear that, buddy.
But I'm doing well, Tom. Another good show and another great guest. And going to learn a lot tonight, I think.
I think we are because, not a lot is known about the subject for tonight. And as you can see, we do have a special guest. He is the author of the upcoming book, Little Wing, the Jimmy McCullough story. He is Paul Sally. Paul, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm also frozen. I'm here in Missouri, so
yeah. Let's just leave it to that guy on the West Coast there, to rub it in, which he always does.
Chilly here too. Come on, man.
Yeah,
it's in the 60s today. Come on.
Ooh, that's cold. So cold.
Yeah, please.
Well, anyways, Andy and I have our tea.
We have our tea. Yeah. You know, yes. We got to listen. You know, we do what we got to do to survive.
Exactly. So. Yeah. But we're not here to talk about the weather, but we're here to talk about Jimmy. There really isn't any news at hand to talk about. But luckily, thank you. You got the package I sent you today, and everything. I hope turned out okay.
Yeah, it did. It did. Thank you very much. Thank you for the 45. And thank you, Martin, absolutely, for the blue vinyl, the HMV blue. I'll open this up in the coming days. And I think my McCartney 3 journey is complete.
That's
yours
funny.
Yours isn't. But
I think I have one more. I think, because our buddy Joe Mayo, he ordered the Coke bottle vinyl from the UK store that was just, in January, they said that they got back in stock. So he ordered a couple. He ordered two on accident. So I said, I'll take the other one off your hands. So he still hasn't heard anything yet about that. So he doesn't know if they've shipped yet or not. So I'm curious to see what happens there. But yeah, once I get that Coke bottle, I think my McCartney 3 journey will be over as well, until, if we do get a deluxe McCartney 3 set. So we'll...
Yeah, Paul, did you dabble in any of this crazy colored vinyl stashes of stuff?
I did, yeah. I got the red Third Man. And I thought, that'll be enough for me, besides the digital. Right. But, you go home to St. Louis, you're on winter break, and you go to the record store and you see McCartney 3 there. So, and you just can't help yourself. So I got two black vinyl and one white vinyl.
Nice. Well,
you got that limited edition black vinyl, huh? Good.
Yeah. That's the rare one right there.
I was really surprised too when I saw
it. Yeah, because not a lot of stores were getting them right off the bat too. I remember one of my the Target one. I mean, only one Target in the greater Phoenix area got the vinyl that day of one of my big record stores that I go to out here. They only got the CDs in at first, so it was that vinyl journey was a tough one there for a good 2 to 3 weeks, waiting for everything to come in from the mail. Exactly. I know, right? First world problems, huh?
Yeah.
We love it though.
Yeah.
Of course.
What were, what was your impressions of McCartney 3, Paul?
I loved it. I also really enjoyed Egypt Station. But I think I rank McCartney 3 above feature position for me.
Yeah, I think I'm doing that too. I think from top to bottom, inside out, I think it's just an altogether better record. There's a couple, you know, weaker songs on each of Station in my opinion, but that kind of, you know, bring it down, knock it down a notch. But yeah, McCartney 3 is really solid. So
yeah, no, you felt that you had each of Station above it initially.
Initially, because, you know, like a lot of people, you know, I heard that really crappy
leak.
Leak that was going around, and I was very underwhelmed when I first heard it. So I was kind of actually a little scared, you know, for the record, when the record came out.
Right, but then.
Yeah, once we heard it, you know,
legit.
And it's all its glory, it was like, yeah, this is great. Absolutely.
Pretty kick-ass. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe we're 2 months out now from that release date, just about the day of recording here.
And so, I've been doing a lot better with the new releases. Usually in the past, when a new McCartney record would come out, I would just like listen to it like a month straight. Like that'd be the only thing I would listen to. And then unfortunately, then you kind of get burnt out on it a little bit. Here with the last couple records with the Aegis Station and with McCartney 3, I've been kind of listening to it. Maybe I'll listen to it like once a week, you know what I mean? Instead of just like constantly every day. So, I mean,
yeah, don't get burned. Don't get burned out like Mayo. I think Mayo's burned out on it already.
I think he's more burnt out on buying it than listening it myself.
Probably.
But enough of that. So we're here with Paul to talk about, a protege, a guitar genius, as you will. I mean, Paul will tell us a lot more about Jimmy, but the book you're writing, Little Wing, Jimmy McCullough Story, just, you know, in general, why Jimmy, or better yet, why should people know about Jimmy's story?
I mean, if somebody who's watching us, give us Jimmy McCullough from unknowns to, you know, who is he? I mean, because there's people out there that watch this will say, well, who's Jimmy McCullough? We know who he is, but the average person may not.
Well, Jimmy, as you know, most people know, was Paul McCartney's guitar player in Wings for 4 years in the mid-70s. But before then, he played in a band called Thunderclap Newman with Pete Townsend producing. And their hit record, Something in the Air, went to number one, which made Jimmy the youngest paid guitarist at the time. And I think the record might still stand, but he was the youngest UK guitarist to hit number one at 16.
Wow. And that song was written by Speedy Keen, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah. So number one at 16, Pete discovered Jimmy a few years earlier when Jimmy's band, the Jaguars, supported The Who in Scotland. So Pete was blown away by just how young Jimmy was then and how talented he was. So from there, Jimmy went on to play with John Mayall for a short tour, and then Stone the Crows with Maggie Bell, who was Scotland's answer to Janis Joplin.
Yeah, I kind of got that sense because I was watching that concert that you posted on your YouTube channel with Stone the Crows. Amazing stuff. And yeah, you kind of get that vibe watching her, that she was kind of like almost like a Janis type.
Yeah. Do you like Jimmy's car vest?
Yes. The vest was hilarious. The clothes that the Brits would wear around that time was very humorous.
Yeah. And shortly after that, he joined Wings. All before the age of 21.
Wow.
Incredible.
Pretty amazing. So,
it is a great, amazing. But tell us then, why take this journey to do a book about Jimmy?
And it's been a journey, right? This has been some years in the making, right?
Yeah. So I got into Jimmy when I was 13, thanks to Wingspan. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the time, I didn't really know too much about Wings, but you know, sharing the same name as Paul McCartney, you know, you kind of figured that I would sort of lean towards his solo career more than the others.
Naturally.
So Wingspan was on, I think it was ABC. So I tuned in and started watching, and then Jimmy got introduced, and I was like, wow, you know, that's really cool. This young, slender kid playing guitar with Paul McCartney. That's pretty amazing. So my interest was kind of peaked there, and then I just did my own research, and I found that there wasn't too much out there on him besides, you know, little blurbs in the history books.
Right.
And most of it was kind of slanted negatively towards him. Mm. They didn't really give him much of a personality besides, oh, you know, here's Jimmy McCulloch. He was this wild, wild rock and roll kid.
Right.
Really talented at guitar, but that was about the gist of it.
Lived fast and died young.
Yeah, huh? Because, I mean, he was so young when he died. So, you know, he trailblazed through his life. So burning a couple bridges, I'm sure. So anybody that would have spoken negatively about him, that, you know, undoubtedly that's going to creep out in the ensuing decades, you know, and that becomes myth, which hopefully, you know, your book will debunk a lot of those myths.
Yes, yes. So there have been a lot of myths out there for years and years.
All right. Well, so, we'll get to that. We'll get to the myth part later. But
I have a few questions on those myself.
Okay. I'll do my best to answer them.
Yeah. But the book itself. So, did you shop this around the publishers, or are you gonna self publish this yourself? How's that going to be presented? How's the book going to be presented?
I'm going the self publishing route. Because I feel that gives me as much creative control as possible.
Right.
So, you know, with COVID, things get delayed. Yeah. So I would rather have it be delayed on my own terms than
just
having to rush to meet a deadline from a publisher and stuff like that.
Got you. And did you start like a GoFundMe site to help pay for this, or are you doing this all on your own?
I did start an indie GoGo, I think it was a few years back for photo licensing.
Okay.
So I think that was really the only crowd raising platform I used.
Gotcha.
Put the idea together to put a book together on Jimmy McCulloch?
Oh, 2007-ish.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've been working on it since then. Obviously not full time, but that was when I made my first contact, which was Colin Allen, who was Jimmy's songwriting partner and former bandmate Slim the Crows. So since then, it's been a journey, a long and winding road. But
talk about that because 2007, obviously, I mean that's like 100 years in technology, you know, in years, you know what I'm saying? So talk about reaching out to people back then, as opposed to maybe like yesterday, if you happened to get a hold of somebody yesterday, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So back then I think it was mostly through email. Like I would search their names, or the bands that they were in, find their website, use the contact forum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just hope for the best, and then I've been pretty lucky.
Wait to hear from somebody, and sounds like you've gotten some good feedback and from people to work on this book. So,
Yeah, it does get pretty frustrating too sometimes when you reach out to artists and you know you never hear anything back from them, and then sometimes you'll be surprised and they do reach out to you,
which I think has actually been a pretty plus for us in this podcasting world with COVID, because you'll find that more artists and guests and authors will kind of get back to you and say, oh yeah, I'll come on and talk to you for an hour and plug my thing, because what else are they doing? Nothing.
Yeah.
Exactly. So talk about people that you've been able to interview for the book.
So I've been able to interview Pete Townsend.
Score?
Score. Roger Daltrey.
Big score. Big wins. Yeah.
John Mayall.
Oh.
Yeah, nice.
There you go.
Those are probably the big three. Awesome. Colin Allen. Miller Anderson. Howie Casey. Tony Dorsey.
Wow. Oh, there you go.
Various crew that work with Wings and Slim the Crows. Jimmy's brother Jack, of course.
Right.
Jack's sort of like the main interview that I've done.
Right.
stuff throughout the book. Various like childhood friends, bandmates. So it really spans his entire life.
Gotcha. Now Jimmy's brother, you said Jack, I mean, he's been playing a big part lately because he's helping out with like the texts and photographs and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. So the Jack and his family are really gracious. And they're going to be allowing me to use some family photos that they're putting together for me. And then, Jack's been really gracious with his time, to, you know, answer what questions I have. And cause you know, we just want to set the truth straight when it comes to Jimmy and get the true story out there.
Did the family have any plans to do something like this, or when you came along, this was like a new thing, and were they excited
who is the family? What's the who's left? I mean, is it you just dealing with his brother, I guess, basically, or his parents? I mean, you know.
So Jimmy's brother Jack and his family. So his wife and his kids are who I'm closest with.
Okay.
They had no plans to do anything.
Okay.
But I know that in the past, people have approached them to do a book, and you know, for various reasons, that didn't happen. So I came along and really had to prove myself. To show that I wasn't, you know, just somebody out there wanting to make a quick buck. So eventually I must have done the right thing and showed that I was all about the music and wanting to, you know.
Which I think are all noble things. I mean, because he's been gone for so long now that you would think that the state and the family would love kind of an authorized account of Jimmy's life, because he was so young when he passed. So it's interesting that they're a little cool about it in the early goings about it. Now that you seem to have won their support, which is good, you know, because it should have their endorsement and it should be told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, I think it was all about them wanting to make sure that, you know, somebody was going to do it the right way.
Understood.
So, I mean, they're fantastic, and I can't thank them enough for all the support and stuff that they've done for me over the years. In terms of the book,
so. Gotcha. I mean, have you hit any roadblocks along the way? I mean, was there stuff about Jimmy that you were hoping to find out that you weren't able to find out, or what kind of things did you learn along the way since writing the book?
I haven't really stumbled into any particular roadblocks in terms of info. If you want to talk about like interviews, I mean, of course I've tried to get Paul, but
of course
that's probably the main roadblock, but thankfully there is, you know, archival interviews and stuff like that. But yeah, in terms of info,
go ahead.
I just learned like just what a funny, compassionate guy Jimmy really was, and that, you know, it doesn't get portrayed in the biographies of, you know, Paul. I mean,
right,
I can see why it wouldn't, but
what was it like contacting Pete and Roger, and how easy was that, and how quick was the turnaround to get in touch with those two guys and talk to them?
So for that, I have one of my friends who works for The Who. He's a huge Jimmy fan, so he helped me out in both of those cases.
Gotcha.
Nice.
Roger was more recent. I think, you know, COVID, not doing anything.
Sure.
and Pete was 2013, I think. It was a while back. But
how long did you have with each of them?
Pete was through email. So okay. I just sent him a list of questions, and Roger I spoke with on the phone for about 10, 15 minutes.
Oh, gotcha.
Wow. Still pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Was it through a Zoom call or just like on the phone?
It was on the phone.
It was on the phone. Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha. Got you. So, but you know, you involved the family. I mean, you didn't technically have to do that, but I mean, probably a pretty good idea on your part to get their, you know, get their involvement and their, and, you know, have them approve everything that was in the book itself. Then I take it.
Right. Because I, you know, I wouldn't want anything out there that is false. So going through the family and having Jack, you know, read over my manuscript and approving it meant the world to me.
Because he's a musician as well, right? I mean, he was a drummer, was he?
Yep. He was a drummer.
Okay. So, I mean, what kind of things did he have to say about his brother? I mean, did they get along? Were they, you know, friendly towards each other?
Yeah. They were really close. They were best friends. So that's a relationship.
Gotcha. Very cool. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, you originally wanted to do this as a documentary, right?
Well, I kind of teetered that line between don't want to do a book, don't want to do a documentary. Mm-hmm. So it started out as a book, and then I kind of was like, oh, maybe I want to do a documentary. Right. But my friend Brian, who works for The Who, he kind of persuaded me to go back towards the book route. Thankfully, because you know he told me that it's pretty expensive to do a documentary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Getting all the licensing for audio and film, right, probably pretty much next to impossible. So I have Brian to thank for steering me in the right direction. So
I mean, unless you have like studio involvement that will help, you know, put money towards all of that stuff, like you said, it is pretty much impossible to do something like that. But either way, and plus these documentaries too, I mean, they, you know, a lot of them, I've not to say that yours would have been bad, but I mean, it's just, some of them are just put together so quickly that, you know, they're like an hour and a half long, you know, and they skip like certain parts of their career, you know? So I think probably, you know, the book route was probably best to go. And then, like you said, you're self-publishing. So you've got total control over what goes in the book, you know, and you can make sure that's your story and it's the accurate story, you know, of Jimmy. So, tell us where, how far along are you in the book process right now?
So I'm just waiting for family visuals. So after I get those, then I'll send everything over to my editor and let him do the layout design. And then I don't have a publishing date yet, but it'll be at some point in 2021.
Okay, so you're looking at to get it out at some point this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome.
Oh, excellent.
Well, okay. That'll be much awaited and look forward to, of course, you know, in the McCartney book world. I mean, that'll be much anticipated. I can't wait. Can't wait to read it.
Yeah. So talk about the self-publishing thing a little bit more. I mean, do you have like the technique down? I mean, are you sending it to somebody to publish? You know, talk about that aspect of the book.
So originally I was going to go through Amazon self-publishing service, KDP.
Okay.
But recently I've kind of leaned more towards Barnes & Noble Press.
Oh.
Because I did some research and Barnes & Noble actually allows you to do not only paperback and ebook, but also hardcover.
Oh, good. Okay, cool. Right.
And they also allow you to do pre-orders, which is something KDP didn't. Okay. So that kind of persuaded me to go with Barnes & Noble Press for the
hardcover. It kind of gives you an idea of how many you're going to need to press right off the bat, I take it?
It's print on demand.
Oh, it's all print on demand, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha.
Right,
and the Barnes & Noble quality is pretty dang good for being a self published. So.
And will they give you like a couple authors' copies too, Paul? Like to keep on file, they'll give you like 10. Like, because I've heard that like we've talked to our friend Kid O'Toole, who's written a few books, and she explained because I'm in the middle of researching one now. She was explaining this process to me that these self publishers will send you a couple of copies to have on file. Like, I guess they call them author's copies. I'm not sure. Yeah.
So I can order as many author copies as I want. to have on file to send to you guys to review. And I think if I'm correct, there's no difference between the author copies and the for sale copies, except the author copies don't have an ISBN number on the back.
Right. Gotcha.
So let's just talk a little bit about Jimmy himself. You know, I like I said earlier, I watched that that Stone the Crows show earlier, and I was just really blown away by his style. He looks like he's kind of one of those like emotional type, you know, making the faces while he plays guitar and stuff like that. What while you were, you know, researching him, what were some of your favorite bits that that Jimmy did, not really including McCartney?
Well, my favorite album of all time actually is Hollywood Dream by Thunder Club Newman.
Okay. And that was the album with that featured Something in the Air then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So there's a song on there called Accidents. It's like a 9-minute epic. It has sound effects that are very reminiscent of A Day in the Life for all the Beatles fans out there that want to check it out. But Jimmy does this insane minute-long solo in the middle of it, which is pretty sublime. I think he was only 16
at that point.
It's pretty amazing.
Prodigy.
And that band, yeah, exactly. And that band, unfortunately, didn't last long. What, 2 years tops, maybe?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's pretty unfortunate.
Right.
But I tell you what, the royalties they've made off of that song, though, over the last 50 years, has got to be incredible. So the estates of whoever that band, who's ever still remaining, must be doing pretty well off that one song.
That's pretty amazing if you think about it.
Right.
It really is.
And then now he stumbled into, not really stumbled, but then he got into Stone the Crows purely by replacing somebody, right?
Yeah, he replaced Les Harvey, who was Alex Harvey's brother of the Sensational Alex Harvey Band.
Okay.
So Les, unfortunately, passed away due to a freak accident. He died on stage, I think in May of 72, when he touched his
electrocuted
mic. He was electrocuted, and just really, really tragic. I think he was 26 or 27 when he passed.
Oh wow, that's young too. Wow.
So then Jimmy joined a month later.
Yeah, he helped finish an album, I think, too, and then they went on tour.
Yep. So they released a record, and then Jimmy played on the remaining two songs, and then they mostly toured for another year after that, and then they broke up.
Oh wow! So bad luck with bands that he's gotten into. So let's go into a little bit about joining Wings, because his first appearance was really not on the Wings album; it was on the McGear album, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So was he technically a member of Wings then, or was he just more than like a hired gun at the time?
I think he was a hired gun at the time, but the McGear album was the record that cemented his place in Wings, because Paul was really impressed by his playing on that album.
Before Nashville or after Nashville?
Before.
Before.
Yeah. And before that, Jimmy had done some work with Paul, Linda, and Denny in Paris, on the Susie and the Red Stripe sessions in the fall of 73.
That was his first work with Paul and Linda. It was back as far as late of 73. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And he was, and before that he was invited to the mixing sessions for Band on the Run by his friend Ian Horn, who was Wings' roadie.
With Trevor, him and Trevor Jones. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he got to hear Band on the Run. Wish he'd played on it, but you know, he was just a couple months too late.
Right.
That.
Yeah.
Wow. Exactly. So that's interesting. So he actually was in the orbit of Paul much sooner than what is generally known as. You know, you see Junior's Farm, boom, and there's Jimmy, but he actually was already kind of in the mix a little bit before that, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, Paul had heard of Jimmy way back in 69 when they were doing the Get Back album. There's tape of I think Michael Lindsay Hogg discussing this new band, and the guitarist who looked like he was 12. So that was Paul's sort of first introduction to Jimmy, and I guess he sort of remembered who he was.
Mm-hmm.
All those years later.
Gotcha. So then, you know, then the McGeer album comes out. They go to Nashville. I mean, he's still not like an official member yet at this time. Once they go to Nashville, or is he? Do you know when exactly he becomes an official member of
Nashville? Wings? Right, I think he was already in with Nashville.
Yeah, he was already in Wings, right. Officially. Then
right.
It just wasn't announced to the press,
right? Because they only like I said, the only really official right. product you got out of Paul was the single in 74.
Single, right? 74 Genius Farm, because you know the beginning of 74 was just so Band on the Run heavy because right. that album was
right.
Was,
so I think the so good Paul, I'm sure, can speak better this, but probably the and that was obviously a big hit video and everything else like that. But really, the mass popular people first exposure to Jimmy really was probably really Venus and Mars the next year, right? It was everybody was like, okay, who's the guitarist on this record? And that was probably everybody's like, wow, you know, who is this guy? Even though he had already been there for a while, but I don't know if you would agree that Venus and Mars was probably the first time that mass exposure got to Jimmy on that kind of a scale, you know?
Oh, for sure, yeah, for sure.
Was Jimmy an ambitious musician? I mean, did he want his own, like, did he want to do pave his own career in a way?
He did, yeah. He was very ambitious, and his main musical ambition was to do a solo album, which unfortunately he never got around to doing,
gotcha.
or to finishing, I should say. So he was working on one off and on for years. And just
gotcha.
Time to finish it.
Right. The tour, the big 75 tour, then going into America, where the start of it was delayed. I mean, it was pretty much delayed because of Jimmy, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So there's here's one of the myths. There's a myth out there that Jimmy got into a drunken fight with David Cassidy. Either Jimmy punched David Cassidy, punched a TV, or punched a hole in the wall. All sound really spectacular, but in reality, he just slipped on the bathroom floor getting out of the bath in Paris after their gig, and that was basically it.
And that was delayed, I think, like by a month or so.
Yeah.
The tour. Gotcha. So, I mean, other than that, Wings at the Speed of Sound then was already pretty much recorded in the can by then. And then they were just waiting for the U.S. leg to start then, pretty much. Would that be accurate?
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I think they had just introduced Speed of Sound on that European tour, that brief European tour.
Okay.
Right.
I can't remember when Speed of Sound was released, but
okay.
I know they had previewed some of the songs from it.
Gotcha.
Right. I think, in 70, I'm trying to think. They did that initial tour in September the 9th, the show opens up at the Galmont, and I think it was all, obviously, it wasn't just all Venus and Mars material. The Speed of Sound stuff, did they play it before Kidding America? I can't recall exactly.
Yeah, they played, they did a short European tour in the spring of 76.
Before coming over
to America, yeah.
Right, okay.
So they played like Paris, which is where Jimmy's accident happened.
Right, okay. Right.
Gotcha.
Germany. All right,
so true or false, that story that Jimmy refused to play a solo and Paul yanked him back on, true or false?
I don't know if he refused to play a solo. But,
or an encore or whatever. It was an encore.
But something happened that Jimmy felt that he just didn't want to go back out on stage.
Right. Because I think that's one of the things that Paul talks about on the Wingspan documentary.
Yeah.
About
Jimmy,
you know.
And
you're playing this.
And Howie Casey talked to me about it as well. So.
Okay.
So it's in the book.
Oh, cool.
Very good. Awesome. Another thing to look forward to then. Excellent. Jumping up and then to the start of the London Town record, which, you know, sounded like, you know, you start off with like a song like Girls School when it looks like it's going to be this, you know,
heavy rocking album,
you know, rocking album, but it turns into more of like a folky style. You know, do we know how he enjoyed, if he enjoyed, you know, that style of music? I mean, what was his kind of, you know, take on, you know, those sessions, if you know?
So I asked Jack about this, and he said that he wasn't sure how Jimmy liked the album as a whole, but he knows that he liked some of the songs that were on.
Okay, right. Because he does have some great, you know, great guitar bits, especially on like Cafe on the Left Bank, you know, which is amazing. And then obviously we know about, you know, Girl School, which was recorded really early in those sessions. But do we know if, you know, how well he got along with the McCartneys?
I think, you know, initially he got on pretty well with them, but, you know, over time, you know, various things happened and their relationship kind of soured a little bit, but, you know, it is what it is.
Right. Now, and then also another thing that I guess would be, I don't know if it's really a myth or not, but, you know, Jeff Britton is pretty much kicked out of the band because of Jimmy, or just because those two don't get along or didn't get along.
So I talked with Jeff for the book, and he cleared up all the myths surrounding he and Jimmy's relationship. So Jeff was severely misquoted in one of the musical papers. When he was talking about Jimmy.
He's not, he wasn't the only one in musical history to be misquoted in musical papers, I guess.
Yeah. I guess, Jeff's main thing was, you know, when Jimmy would, drink, you know, as most musicians did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scott, no less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he was, you know, and he was young, you know, he was, you know, difficult to deal with, but, Jeff told me that they, you know, they worked on their relationship and they mended it. So it was okay.
Cool.
That's something people don't know.
That's really nice to hear that they mended it, which, because that you'll never hear reported anywhere.
No.
Right. Leaving Wings. Was that a big deal for him?
This is kind of what I want to debunk another myth here.
Yeah, go ahead, Andy. Then go ahead.
And I don't think Paul knows where I'm going with this. I forget what book I've read it in. It's in one of these books where after he left and he was all pissed off and he was going to go take retribution against Paul and Lynn. You know the story I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The myth. Please, please clarify that and debunk it and why that got out. You know the one I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, that is 100% false.
I thought so. Tom, do you know what we're talking about?
No, that's why I was really curious. But yeah,
so Paul, you probably know the story way better than I do, but I just remember reading that as a young kid, and I'm like, what? He's going to go up to the farm and try to kill Paul and Linda? No way. That was the story.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It was published in a book that came out in the early 90s.
You don't have to name the author.
Yeah, I don't want to get sued by him, but.
Oh, maybe it was by that. That makes sense. That makes sense now.
Yes.
That makes sense now.
That's the author. Yeah.
That's the guy.
I knew the author, but I just didn't know the story because, you know, he also, I don't know if it was the same book that he also put in a picture in there that he probably shouldn't have put in there either.
That's the guy. Okay. So now it makes sense.
I also debunked that. That's not what it is.
Okay.
All right, so where did that even come from, and how did that even get out into, you know, anywhere? I mean, just, you know, just madness. It's just, you know.
That's a good question. It came from somewhere, and then he.
But I mean that gets purported now and gets, and now that's like Jimmy's family sees that now, and it's like that's totally like not how it happened, you know. You know, so it's just I'm glad that your book is going to dispel a lot of that because, man, that was just total trash.
So was he.
Well, that picture, funnily enough, They had never seen it before. So
the family.
Never seen it. So so we got to talking about it one way or another. I can't remember how. So I sent it over to them, and they were like, no, this isn't from
gotcha.
That night. So, which is it's good that they confirmed that that's not what it is.
No, yeah.
Because that photo has been out there in that book for so many years, and it's fooled so many people. It fooled me, pretty much everybody. So I'm glad to say that was taken to life.
He makes a decision to leave. So he wanted to leave Wings and go join the Small Faces, or he just had enough of Paul. And then, like, was the opening for him to rejoin with the Small Faces, and that's why he left Wings, or kind of a little bit of both? Like, what's your understanding of that, of his exit?
So Jimmy left over money. He felt that he wasn't getting his fair dues, as Jack would say. So they had an argument over money. Jimmy felt he should be getting a little bit more, because he was hoping, you know, this band, who was one of the biggest bands in the world at the time. So Jimmy decided to leave, and he hooked up with Steve Marriott and the Small Faces. And I think it was a little bit of both, like Steve convincing Jimmy to join. Because I know there's stories out there from the other Small Faces that Steve didn't ask them if Jimmy could join. He just joined.
That's funny. Yeah, a couple other myths then too that you, I mean, there's like myths about his songwriting credits on the McCartney albums, Venus and Mars and Speed of Sound, right? The two songs that he, Wino Junco and Medicine Jar?
Yep. So Jimmy did not write the lyrics, contrary to popular belief, to what almost everybody says in the comment section of any video that you see. Paul in the recent archive books for Speed of Sound and Venus and Mars. Yep. So Colin Allen wrote the lyrics to both of
those.
So Jimmy put those lyrics to music.
Gotcha.
So I was looking. Funnily enough, back in 76 on the tour, Paul would talk about how Jimmy would write the music to Colin's lyrics. Mm-hmm. But then if you read the archive books,
his name, Colin's name is in there now.
It's in there, right?
Yeah.
It's not on the, it's not, it's, but it wasn't in there initially.
It was.
Oh, it was.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I think it's just, I think it, Jim, just the way that Jimmy passed away, unfortunately, and him singing those songs.
People assume.
And they always say how ironic it is, but it's not. To me, it's not ironic because it's not, they're not about him. So I did talk to Colin for the book about those particular songs, and he sheds light on what they're about and who they're for.
Now Colin was in the Stone Crows with, Stone the Crows.
Yeah.
Right. With Jimmy at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And those songs came after the breakup of the band then.
Medicine Jar dates back to the Stone the Crows period.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it does. Okay. Gotcha. But not just sure never recorded on album then.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, as a big Jimmy fan, in terms of his Wings output, what's your favorite period of Jimmy's work with Wings? You know, is it Speed of Sound? Is it Venus and Mars? Is it some of the other stuff? Is it live stuff? McGear, what do you like the best? What's your favorite Wings era of Jimmy's?
Well, my favorite Wings record is Venus and Mars, so I have to go with that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I love Wings Over America as well. I mean, how could you not?
Right.
Obviously, he gets a chance to really flourish on that live record, you know.
Right.
But I like all eras.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my dad saw Wings Over America in 76, and, you know, he was thoroughly impressed with the show. He saw the Chicago show, and he was like, and he was about the same age as Jimmy. He's the same age as Jimmy McCulloch then. And he was like, there's a guy who's my age playing with him, you know? I remember him being impressed with that when he saw that show. So, and he was like, yeah, that guitarist, he's like my age. I said, yeah, I was before I was born, but yeah, it's a, yeah. And then when you could watch that show now, especially
right.
you watch it on the Blu-ray now, rock show.
Yeah.
It's a really, it's like the lasting legacy of what Jimmy McCulloch is and
yeah.
remembered for, you know, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, for such a, well, he's a little guy, but he seemed like he had a big personality, and he was able to, he can fit into playing those huge stadiums and whatnot. He seemed like he fit right in there and seemed really comfortable with those shows. I mean, he was pretty seasoned by the time he, you know, went on tour with Paul in 75, you know, for the first leg of that tour. So,
yeah,
you know, not, he probably wouldn't have any.
Not many 22-year-olds could be that season.
Right.
No. Yeah. They couldn't. Think about it. Right. You know, think about it. It's just so, it's amazing, you know, to be so young, right? Yeah. And a band like that. Yeah. Incredible.
When did he start, you know, playing guitar?
Well, he started around age 11.
Okay.
So he turned professional when he was 15.
Wow.
With Thunder Club News. Well, his first recording band was One in a Million, which was 67. Okay. So he would have been 13, 14.
Wow.
I guess professionally, Thunderclap Newman was the first.
Right. And Paul, right. What was the name of that record again you had mentioned with that song, Accidents, being 9 minutes? I would want to just write that down so I can
start. Hollywood Dream.
Hollywood Dream. Okay. Mm. Just take a note of that. Hopefully cool. It's on. Hopefully it's streaming.
It should, yeah.
Okay.
Should be.
Okay, cool. And he's all over that record, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
You know, one of my all-time favorite guitarists is Terry Kath, and I follow the Terry Kath the Facebook page. And I was kind of surprised when I saw you there one, I think it was probably last year at some point, and you're talking about Jimmy possibly being in a band with Terry Kath. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That there's not really much to say on that. It was just something that they talked about at the time.
Okay. So they had known each other then, Terry and Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Talk about two of the guys that framed so much of the great music in the 70s, man. Right. So in terms of like just guitar work, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was Jimmy, Terry Kath, Carl Wilson,
really?
Jimmy's friend Dave Clark, yeah,
from that was Dave Clark Five.
No, different Dave Clark.
Different. Okay. I was gonna say, yeah.
So this Dave Clark was in White Line with Jimmy and Jack, and he also was with Noel Redding and the Noel Redding band.
Okay, gotcha.
But yeah, that would have been a
super spectacular group.
Lineup. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and Tom, when Terry Kath, when did he pass away?
He passed in 77, I think it was. It was January 78, I think it was.
So before Jimmy.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. January 78. So he was really young too, you know, so it was sad, you know. I mean, between 69 and 79, or even what, when did Keith Moon, was it, who died first, Moon or Bonham?
Moon. Yeah.
Moon died September of 78, yeah. Right. But after the night after Buddy Holly week.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then Bonham was what? 80,
80.
81. Yeah. 80. So yeah.
Was between September, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lennon was, Jimmy was Lennon. September 79.
So. Right. And Lennon was still alive when Bonham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So many. Yeah. So from like 69 to like December, you know, from when Lennon passed in 80, I mean, many.
You go from like, Jimi Hendrix, Janis, all the way to.
Yeah.
Lennon.
Exactly. Lennon. It's.
It's. Yeah.
All of these amazingly talented people should have had long flourished.
Sadly, career. Though, most of those deaths were all by their own making, sadly.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, so.
Absolutely. Which is unfortunate. Jimmy was just more of known of as a drinker, not really much of a hard drug taker, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so the Scots, man, they know how they get after it up there. I'm telling you, they do.
Did you do any traveling for this project?
I did, yeah. So I studied abroad in London. I spent my final semester of college over there. Okay. So I went to visit Jimmy's family when I was over there. And then I also went to Scotland. So I got to see like his childhood house that he grew up in.
Did you tie one on while you were there?
I did meet the really nice lady who lives there now. Lived there back when I visited.
Okay.
She was the person who moved in after the McCulloch's moved from Scotland to London, which is pretty cool. Okay.
Right.
So that would have been 40 odd years.
Right.
But that was the extent of my traveling.
Gotcha. Cool. So, I mean, it was really cool to get to meet the family then. Must have been a real, real proud moment. You know, I guess it would have been like, okay, this is real now.
Yeah. Yeah. They're a wonderful family and, it's pretty surreal, but I'm always thankful for everything that they've done for me in terms of this project wanting me to, you know.
Yeah, because how many people before you decided to even broach this topic with such passion, you know, and bring your passion and what you're into, study it, research it over the course of a decade or more into the fruition of a book. I mean, for somebody that outside of the world of the Beatles scene, you know, that nobody's going to really pay attention. And even now, you know, younger fans may not even know. We're talking about, you have to really kind of be hardcore into Paul to really appreciate Jimmy McCulloch. So, I mean, I'm very hopeful that your book will shed some light on Jimmy and introduce him to a whole new genre, a whole new kind of generation of fans that, you know, don't even really know him that well. So if that's, you know, then that's what your book does. I mean, more power to you, man. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for as well, and for people to see Jimmy in a new light, hopefully, and for him to finally get the respect that he deserves.
Absolutely.
Right. This has the feel of the great Jim Birkenstant book, The Beatle Who Vanished, in a way, because, you know, he had this, like, brief... Well, he did have a long career, but, I mean, it was really magnified there during those McCartney years, so not a lot of people really know, you know, Jimmy as much as you learned. So I think this is going to be a really, really cool book where it's going to, like you say, we're going to bust some myths wide open, and we're going to learn a lot more about him, and it's just... Can't wait. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's going to be a real treasure trove of photos as well, because
that'll be really nice too, to have a lot of nice photographic content to match it up with too. And the fact that the family was so generous in terms of the photographic stuff for your book is again, you know, you're to be commended on that. You know, not too many people would just, you know, acknowledge somebody from America and say, oh, who's this person that wants to write a book about, you know, so and so. And that's a relationship that you fostered and maintained, and you've won the family's respect to do that. So good on you for that, Paul.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
What's the length on the book? I mean, how many pages do you think this is going to be?
It's hard to tell right now. I won't know for sure until after I get all the visuals.
Okay.
Because there's going to be quite a lot of visuals. It'll be lengthy though. That's for sure.
Good.
Gotcha.
It'll be a good read.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Very much so. So how can people find you? Because you have a Jimmy McCulloch Facebook page too, right?
Yep. Yep. So if you search Jimmy McCulloch on Facebook, you'll find the main page. And then if you want to run the group for the book, that's just Little Wing, the Jimmy McCulloch story.
Okay. And I'm sure that's where you're going to post when the book will be available for pre-orders and stuff like that.
Yep.
Okay. So you'll want to reach out.
Yeah. Go ahead, YouTube. Andy. I mean, and you have the awesome YouTube channel too, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Jimmy McCulloch fan.
Right. Which has all the great videos. You've been at that channel for years. I mean, even before I met up with Tom, I remember going to that channel to find all the clips you posted, you know, years ago. So that's been a, you know, a great resource of videos too.
Yeah, cool. And then, good point about the YouTube channel. And you know, I've got the damn bowl right there. I was going to reach for it, but I'm not going to reach for it right now, but, You do a cool thing that I like. I've seen them at other record stores. I never, you know, bought them or anything. But talk about your record bowls that you make. Paul's Bowl of Records, right?
Yeah. So that was just a thing that I started a couple months ago, just sort of out of the blue, because I'd seen them at like antique stores and stuff like that, and I was like, I wonder how easy it would be to just make your own. So I looked up how to do it and. Kind of just grew from there.
Gotcha. Can you do like a video on it on the Jimmy YouTube channel?
I'm sure I could. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to see how that's done.
Yeah. Although he doesn't want to pull potential sales away either.
All right. Make the video and send it to me.
I did see a video recently. Tom, was it you that sent it to me? Was like a video hack?
What's that? No.
I can't remember who sent it to me then. It was like some viral video of a guy that made record bowls, but he went above and beyond. He did like, he used butter and aluminum foil and stuff like that.
Damn.
Like, wow, you don't need to do all that.
is it easy to do? Are they easy to do?
Yeah, it's really easy to do.
Okay, and I would imagine the smaller the gram the thinner the record it is, the easier it is to do, huh?
Grab one of them crappily made 70s ones that flop around like frisbees. Those you could make those really good. Any of these newer ones that are 180 gram would take forever. Those badly pressed records from the 70s that are like you can like almost snap it but not break it. Those would be good ones to do it with.
Well, I found the only ones that won't work are picture discs.
Picture disc. Okay.
Yeah. Really? Okay. That would actually be pretty cool, though.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a cool idea, but unfortunately.
Didn't work, huh?
Didn't work. Yeah. So. I had to go to plan B for that one.
Gotcha. So is there anything else you want to say about the book so people can look forward to when it comes out?
Just I hope that people get ready to get a glimpse of who Jimmy really was as a person, and hopefully you appreciate not only the man, but hopefully you appreciate his music even more than you already do.
And you know, we will definitely, when that book comes out, we will plug it, and you know, even have you back on once we have it.
We'd love to have you back on once the book comes out. It's funny too, because you know, everybody out there, you know, all of us, we're such big Paul fans, and sometimes we forget about, you know, the members of his band. And I think, you know, what you're doing is important, you know, by getting his Jimmy story out. So, you know, anything else, any ideas after this book comes out? I mean, do you want to stick with writing like this, or books in this style?
Well, I've always had an interest in writing, so I would assume that I would stick with the same style. I just haven't really thought beyond this book.
Gotcha. Jeff Britton, Joe English, you know.
Maybe. although I did have a thought recently that that Speedy Keen would be a fascinating subject for a book.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Danny Kirwan would be another one.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Endless possibilities.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, we look forward to the announcement of the book, the pre-order announcement. And is there anything else you wanna plug or talk about before we sign off?
Not that I can go.
Okay, Andy, anything you wanna say before?
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Our YouTube initiative is we've hit I think we're 460 and change now on subscribers. So. Thank you for those, and the comments have been flying in for all of our regular shows, but especially our ranking shows, which I'll defer to Tom with, because by the time this is up, we'll be getting ready to do our next one.
Yep.
Which will be pressed to play.
Go. Oh, I can't wait for Ethan's render.
There it is.
Ethan already knows. Ethan, believe me, when Ethan started the thumbnails for that, I told him right away what not to do with Press to Play.
Not get cute with this album cover, Ethan.
Because our boy Harry Benson too has been is Annie gonna be Linda?
please. I'm sure that the Master Canadian up there is gonna come up with a great concept and a design that's gonna, you know, everybody's gonna go, okay, that's good too. So
I have a question for you guys.
After
your rankings, after you're all done with that, are you gonna do anything else?
We'll definitely continue the ranking things, and I thought maybe do the albums next, maybe, but do it in a three-part series. Go, you know, bottom 10, middle 10, and then, you know, the top, the next 6, 7, whatever it is, you know, after that. But the tough part is like, do we just say the regular albums, rank the regular albums, do we include the cover albums, you know what I'm saying? So
right. I think we're definitely gonna keep doing live stuff, try to do it on a weekly basis when we're done with the main canon. Mm-hmm. Whether that encompasses the live stuff, the covers, break it, whatever it is, but I think that Tom and I definitely are, we're going to keep the live aspect of the channel going. Right. After that, it all becomes on what do we focus on, and we'll kind of get a ranking thing in there somehow, but we'll keep it going for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we could rank videos, we can rank the albums, then you can rank the live albums.
Somebody had a great idea to actually rank the artwork and rank
ooh,
the cover work. Yeah, the cover art.
That's a cool idea.
So that's one we could do too, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we kind of, covered a little bit about that on our on the covers show that we did.
Hmm.
But yeah, we would definitely keep that going. So, but yep. So like Andy said, our YouTube channel is going strong. We want to continue to build that. So please, if you haven't yet, please subscribe. We'd really appreciate that. The comments have been wonderful especially during the ranking the tracks series. I love seeing everybody's rankings, and it's just like a snowflake. Now, no two are the same, and that's been really cool to see, and really appreciate that. So you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. Our website, twolegspodcast.com. That's where you'll find, a lot of our Twitter posts, all of our videos on there. So we got that going for ourselves. And what else?
The new logo.
Logo. Thank you very much. Ethan Alexanian, is just he's very talented, and what an amazing young guy he is to do this for us, and really appreciative for everything that he's been doing with the thumbnails and then with the logo as well. He really, updated it like Andy said, he updated it but kept the integrity of the original logo that my cousin David did, and really appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you, Ethan. It's updated on every platform so far except Podbean. By the time this goes up, maybe it'll be fixed, but as of right now, the old logo, if you guys listen to it, I know like Martin listens to it, I do see the old logo still up there. We're trying to work on that. It's a Podbean tech issue, but everywhere else the new logo is on there. So Ethan, thank you again for that. You're awesome.
he is, and I don't know if you want to. Yeah. Well, anyways, we'll skip that. But anyways, it's great. Thank you, Ethan. Look forward to doing more stuff with you in the future. And so that's great. Podbean, you find us on Podbean everywhere, iTunes, iHeartRadio. Andy's got us on Spotify, got us on Pandora, you got us on Amazon Everything. Music. Yeah, Everything. wherever podcasts play, that's where we are. So Andy, thank you for everything you do, and really appreciate it. And next week we hope to be talking about the McGear album with Tony Trugardo. If not, we'll come up with something else. But we'll see you Wednesday, and then for ranking the tracks, and see you next week after that. So everybody out there, before I'm rambling on, sorry about that. But as always, everybody have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
Listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan.